Well, the most controversial part of the government's recently announced electricity reforms, the phasing out of the fixed low user charge. What will be the impact on the uptake of alternative energy, such as solar power? And how will it affect the elderly, many of whom are on low fixed charges now? Phasing out the fixed low user charge, which households that use lower amounts of power can utilise to save money, is one of the recommendations in the Electricity Price Review, which was set up to investigate whether the electricity market was delivering fair prices to customers. The government agreed with the review in its recent announcements that the low fixed daily charge should go because it was poorly targeted and helped some customers while disadvantaging others. The 30 cent daily charge, split between the retailer and the lines company, is available to those customers who use less than 8,000 kilowatt hours in the North Island or less than 9,000 in the Lower South. But what will the phasing out mean for those people who use less power because they've invested in solar or insulating their homes, or those households that use less power because they're on lower incomes? To discuss, we welcome in the Wellington studio Eric Pyle, who's the Director of Public Affairs and Policy for Solar City, which has been installing solar systems in New Zealand for 38 years. Hello, Eric.
Good morning, Catherine.
And good morning also to Bern Summerfield, who is the Energy Chair for Grey Power. Hi, Bern.
Yeah, good morning, Catherine.
Thanks, Bern. We'll be with you shortly. We're going to start discussing the solar, so please stay with us, Bern. Eric, your position on the proposed phasing out of the low user charge.
Yes, firstly, Catherine, I'll just outline a little bit about Solar City. We've been around, as you say, for 38 years, but more recently we've been really focusing on how we address climate change and how we enable the less well-off Kiwis to get access to this new clean technology. We've installed thousands of solar and battery systems in the last few years, and so we're starting to get some data on how that's going. And pleasingly, we're really starting to see the uptake in places like South Auckland, places like Flaxmere and the Hawke's Bay, Wainui Amata. So we're really starting to see that the objectives of the company set out by Sir Stephen Tindall and others are starting to be met. We're enabling the poorer people to get access to this new technology.
What does your data say about that? What would it cost for a home in Flaxmere to have solar installed?
Well, what we do is we provide solar and batteries as a service. So we take away the upfront high cost, which is, for many Kiwis, a real barrier to adopting these new technologies. You know, not every family has, I don't know, $10,000 or $15,000 sitting in the bank ready to invest in solar. So we make sure that solar and batteries, people will pay no more in the first year than they pay with their current electricity provider.
How do they pay it off then?
They pay it off on a monthly basis.
So they pay. How long would it take to pay off the upfront costs?
Well, it's an energy service, so we provide that energy service.
Do you keep ownership of the hardware?
We keep ownership of the hardware.
And you provide it for 20 years?
And we provide it for 20 years.
Right. So they're paying the same as they would if they were on grid?
In the first year, we make sure that they pay less. And for about the 60 or 70% of the electricity that comes from solar, that does not increase with inflation. So it actually, 60 or 70% of their bill is fixed and reduces in real term, in real terms as inflation increases.
So what percentage of new installations now would be going to communities where we typically would see lower economic status?
For us, a good proportion. We will be releasing that information later this year. I can't sort of steal our own thunder because we're producing a report in about sort of the end of November.
Is it in double figures?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
For our company.
Is the reason you've brought that up front the perception that those households that are installing solar and therefore are less dependent on the grid for electricity tend to be wealthier households? And that's part of the inequality that the review found.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the purposes of our model, of our business model, to try and address that issue and try and enable people who as I said, don't have the sort of $15,000 to $20,000 kicking around to get access to this clean tech. Another sort of part of the context, Catherine, is that we're seeing a potentially a massive increase in electricity demand in this country and globally. We're going to see the electrification of transport, the electrification of process heat. Electricity is going to become the new oil. And we need to really think very carefully about how we do that. Do we double all the poles, wires, transformers, or do we do it really smart and really efficiently and produce a really clean power system?
Do you believe that solar and the perception that more and more New Zealanders will become energy independent of the grid is one of the prime reasons for this move to talk about taking out the fixed charge.
We're not convinced that people will disconnect from the grid completely.
However, they will be using less power and therefore entitled to the low use charge as is currently in place.
Absolutely, and one of the design principles of the low charge, low fixed charge, was to encourage energy efficiency. And I actually think it's been very successful at that. We'd like to see it stay. We'd like to see a suite of policies built around the low fixed charge that actually encourage innovation.
But do you believe that uptake of solar and the perception that more and more people will reduce their dependency on the grid, is one of the key reasons for the government wanting to remove this charge?
I suspect so. I mean, the industry has lobbied for a long time against the low user charge. This has been a long campaign by the industry, particularly the distribution industry. And I guess my view is that they're doing that in part because it is the only policy we really have in the whole electricity sector that encourages people to use less electricity.
They're doing it because the costs of distribution are fixed.
Yep.
The grid costs are fixed. And if more and more people come off grid or use less and less power, then the remaining customers end up paying more for the costs of distribution. Do you accept that?
Not entirely, because what we see coming at us is this huge increase in electricity demand. And the question is, how do we set the right price signals that means that we invest our capital in this country in the wisest and smartest possible way to ensure that we electrify our economy, but we do it in a really, really efficient way?
You see, the reality is that demand for electricity has been flat for about 7 or 8 years.
Yep.
And yes, there's a perception that at some point, as the price of electric vehicles comes down, battery technology gets better, there will be a significant shift. But it has not happened yet.
But it's starting to. If you look at, for instance, the sale of electric vehicles in September in New Zealand, they were twice the total amount of 2015.
So if that's starting. The case, and you are going to be a higher user of power because you're charging your electric vehicle, doesn't that back the government's argument that you are going to be having a greater and greater inequity between those on the low fixed charge and those whom you want to incentivise into using electricity instead of oil?
So what consumers need to see is the real price of electricity, and we need to create incentives so that people, for instance, when they come home, don't charge their electric vehicle. And they charge the electric vehicle, say, at 10 o'clock at night, like I do, I've got an electric vehicle, when there's not much use of the power system. And some of the lines companies are moving in that area. Wellington Electric Lines has very high differential between electricity used at peak times and off-peak times. And we strongly support that, because if we don't have systems like that and everybody, you know, pays quite a high flat charge, they'll come home, they'll charge and plug in their electric vehicles, we'll have to build more kit, basically, more infrastructure to supply all of that, and it will be really expensive.
You're saying if there's not an incentive to save power, then people won't. However, if you had an EV now, could you really be on a low fixed user charge?
Yes, absolutely, with solar and batteries, absolutely. I mean, we're very close. I have solar hot water. We have a very shady house. I don't have solar PV. One of the worst houses, I'm told, by Solar City for having PV. I should have chosen another location, but absolutely.
Do you believe this is going to inhibit the uptake of solar?
It's not going to be helpful, because it sends the wrong signal, and the right signal is to say there should be a very low charge for your connection, and you should see the price of electricity so that you can start to adjust your behaviour, and we can start to adjust the battery system and the control system that we put in the house, which is a smart computer, to change the demand profile of the household, so that at 3 o'clock in the morning, the house is using a lot of electricity. At 6 o'clock in the evening, it is using very little from the grid. And we can do that with our solar and battery systems.
That's what smart meters surely should be doing for households now, those that are on the grid and fully electric. And they're not using them, are they, for those purposes?
No. And so what we do with our solar and battery system is we put a really smart computer in the house that looks at the hot water and all that sort of stuff. And we can actually control that. We control that through the cloud, and we can adjust the whole household energy use to tailor to the customer's needs. And we can adjust, and we'll be producing this information later this year. We can really start to shift the demand profile of houses.
So this incentive is heading the wrong way as far as you're concerned?
Yes, we think it is.
Back to the costs, the fixed costs of running the transmission grid and the concerns that if there was too high an uptake and too many people coming off grid or radically reducing their use of the grid, that it would increase costs for those remaining. Haven't we seen that already act out with the likes of the solar tax that some lines companies have put on solar power users?
The solar tax had an interesting impact in the likes of Hawke's Bay, because we actually saw an increase in the uptake of solar in Hawke's Bay as a consequence of the solar tax.
Do you believe that happened?
I think people were a little bit angry with it, really. I mean, you've got people wanting to do the right thing for climate change. There hasn't been a lot of new generation built recently. Solar has increased significantly. It's now about 100 megawatts in New Zealand. And you had people who said, look, I really want to do something for my children, for my grandchildren in terms of climate change, and I'm being told I can't or shouldn't. And I think that was part of the reaction of some of the people in the Hawke's Bay.
So you were saying that demand increased after the solar tax was put on?
If you have a look at the graphs.
So it went beyond business as usual, and usual projection.
Yep.
What about the realities of the two-way grid? Because the other thing I keep hearing from people who have installed solar is that when they try and pay back into the grid, they get underpaid for what they are. When they try to put power back into the grid, they get underpaid. Is the two-way grid even a thing in New Zealand yet?
Look, it will come in New Zealand, and we are seeing in other parts of the world where you have what's called community energy. So you supply electricity into the grid. It gets purchased by your neighbour or the school, or the school's got a lot of power and you purchase it, which is what I'd like to do in my household because it's quite shady.
And it's the shortest distance, it's the cheapest distance, it's just to provide to your neighbours. But is it happening, Eric? Because these theories and these hypothetical situations have been prognosticated about for a long time, and I appreciate your company is building its business, but we haven't seen a transformation.
No, but in other parts of the world we're starting to see that.
So what is it in New Zealand that inhibits that, apart from the obvious, which is a lot of renewable power available through hydro, although not very cheaply?
Yeah, so we're 80% renewable, but we're not 100%. Okay, we have to get to 100%. That's what the climate change scientists are telling us and so on. And also we're going to need a lot more electricity generation to power our electric cars and so on. One of the issues we have in New Zealand is that the electricity industry, according to Callaghan Innovation, is the second least innovative industry in New Zealand alongside the construction industry. So what we need is really smart policies, really innovative policies that drive innovation. And the innovation issue was picked up in the electricity price review, where they've got some recommendations to try and encourage innovation in the electricity sector. We are seeing innovation in other countries. There's a smorgasbord.
So what's inhibiting it here?
I think really it's policy. The electricity industry is driven by policy. It's driven by regulation, and it's driven by the actual physics of the power system. You know, has to work at 50 hertz and all that sort of stuff. So what we need to see, I think, in New Zealand, we need to look at what other countries are doing, because some other jurisdictions, like California, like Hawaii, like the renewing
They've
energy
They've all got
vision.
Multiple grids. I've spoken to them. Yep. They've all got multiple grids in a very different geography. And I come back to this. The current structure that we have of the electricity market, with one long, skinny grid, okay, and a small number of large, quasi-monopolistic generators who need to make profits, and large profits, we're told, because we need them to invest more in future generation. Is that system ever going to deliver the innovation that you're talking about?
I mean, I think it can, provided we have the right policies that sit around, for instance, the low user charge, and we build out from that and say, how can we encourage things? For instance, if we look at some of these other jurisdictions that you've mentioned, the distributors become what's called distributed system operators. And so what they do, they start to play a very similar role to Transpower. They enable the system, they open up their system to two-way power flows, and we can do that with our technology.
It's not happening
quick enough.
Because is the structure disincentivizing it?
I think there may be some structural issues, and I was pleased to see, for instance, that the EPR is looking at institutional arrangements for electricity. That'll take a long time to work through, I know that. But I think it's the will, it's the narrative, it's you know, there are other examples that we can look at that are not too dissimilar to New Zealand. If you look at, and it's the speed of policy, and Luke Blinko picked up on that in his discussion with you. If you look at an organisation called PJM, it's the largest electricity system on the planet, from Chicago down to Maryland. It's got a very similar structure to New Zealand market structure. In about 2013, 2014, they put in rules around batteries, they put in rules around demand response. We don't have those, and they're not even really on the Electricity Authority's work plan. It'll probably be another 5 years, so we'll be 10 years behind PJM. So again, I come back to, it's about policy. It's about driving through the right policies to encouraging innovation in New Zealand.
Thank you, Eric. Stay with us. Eric Pyle, Director of Public Affairs and Policy for Solar City. It's 27 minutes to 10 on 9 to noon. Thanks for your patience, Bern Sommerfeld, who's the Energy Chair for Grey Power. Bern, first, can I just get your initial position on the move to phase out the low fixed charge over 5 years? What is the organisation's position?
Our position is that the low fixed user charge assists low-use consumers and encourages energy conservation. When it was first proposed in 2014, that was a very good idea. In the year 2019, this has not changed. And as Eric has indicated, there's going to be a greater demand for electricity. And energy conservation is the most important aspect. I can talk. I'm a low user of electricity myself. I use 12 kilowatt hours per day, which amounts to for a month about 340 kilowatt hours. And I live at 43 degrees, 44 minutes south, and I live in quite a cold environment, and We can manage very, very comfortably with energy conservation. Some of the moves we've taken in our own home is we have insulated our home and we have heavy drapes and things, and I utilise a log fire. I use a log fire for heating my own hot water, and in most electricity bills, the heating of hot water is a very high component. It's approximately one third of the energy that you use in your electricity.
Could you explain, Grey Power's involved in the electricity market. Can you explain just broadly why that move happened and how it works?
I have an article in front of me which was written in September 2017. It was 4 years of Grey Power electricity, and basically the idea was, if we could create the best, most transparent electricity offer in the market, all other retailers to keep their customers would have to offer up better deals. Now, the deal that was offered by Grey Power Electricity, I can only speak as a customer of Grey Power Electricity, as I'm not part of the board of Grey Power Electricity. I am on a low user rate, and my low user rate is 15 cents per day. And before you mentioned the low user rate was approximately 30 cents a day, and some retailers can adjust the rate to what they would like.
So through this deal, I think it was with Pulse Energy, the partnership, so through that deal, yeah, you've been able to squeeze an even lower rate than many low user charges would get.
I believe that's possible.
Yeah.
And I know from my own electricity bill that by doing a comparison with other energy retailers, they have never ever been able to match Grey Power Electricity.
So is Grey Power Electricity a pretty clear sign that for many older people, many people on the pension, that power bill is absolutely fundamental to the budgeting?
Oh, it's very fundamental to the budgeting, because particularly when you start talking about daily daily supply charges. It has been proposed by the Energy Network Association that they would like to increase the rate. Now, the normal standard rate for a daily supply charge is approximately $1.50 per day. In comparison with my low fixed daily supply rate of 15 cents a day, you don't have to have a degree in mathematics to figure it out that once we change the daily supply rate, the cost of electricity is going to increase. And in my own case, particularly being a low user, I'm not going to use any more electricity, but I'm going to lose my low fixed daily supply rate, and so consequently my price of electricity will increase and I'm using no more electricity.
I mean, the argument the government is making and that the review made was that one user is subsidising another user. The people on the low rate are effectively subsidising others who can't be on the low rate. I know you've got to meet it.
I actually disagree with that reasoning, mainly because the low fixture, I don't regard myself as subsidising anybody. I'm talking from a customer's point of view, and I think that I've got in front of me page 62 of the final report of the electricity price review. Now, on the second paragraph, they're talking about a five-year phase-out coordinated with help for households and energy hardship, and the distribution pricing changes mentioned above should moderate the impact of removing the cap on most low-use householders. Some distributors suggest a shorter phasing-out period, but this, in our view, and this is the view of the Electricity Price Review Panel, could result in unacceptable price increases for low-use householders. And this is basically what I'm saying, that once we lose that, our cost of our power bills are going to increase, but we are not going to be using more electricity.
So you've got a meeting with the minister booked, I think, have you?
Pardon?
Have you got a meeting with the minister booked, Grey Power?
Yes, we have a meeting with the minister on the 21st of October.
And it'll be a pretty frank message, Byrne.
I think it will be, yes, it is. But then again, we've got to bear in mind that the removing of the low fixed user rate was discussed prior to the 2017 election. And Most political parties came out, and they sort of felt that the low fixed user charge was a middle class subsidy and various things like that. I'm just reading from various articles I've got because I've been following this for about I discovered that there was going to be a move to remove the low fixed user.
Well, you're going to have a different message for the minister by the sounds of it. Thank you. Thanks, both of you. Byrne Sommerfeld there, who is Energy Chair for Grey Power, and thanks very much to Eric Pyle from Solar City as well. We have an interview with the minister tomorrow, I believe. Lots to discuss about the significant reforms that have been proposed. But are they significant enough? We will find out.